Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also the author of the forthcoming The Weed Agency, which is released June 3rd. But don't let that stop you from ordering your advanced copy now. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, we start with not exactly the good. We really have two bads and a crazy.
We skip the good today. The good is the fact that you promote my book every day so that I don't have to. It's just greatly appreciated since I'm going to have to return into a relentless pitchman all the rest of my day. But yeah, some folks' days just aren't any good martinis.
Yeah.
They just accept that. It's a fact of life.
Well, one of the things that the administration, of course, has been trying to convince Americans of is that the president's health care law is a major success. The enrollment allegedly brought in over 8 million new folks into the system, and that it greatly exceeded their enrollment targets. Well, McKinsey & Company, a very respected firm, does a lot of surveys of employers and individuals, and it turns out 74% of those 8 point whatever million already had insurance, and so they signed up most likely because they got kicked off their plan. And only 14% of Obamacare exchange signups were previously uninsured. Ovik Roy at Forbes writes about this. According to the new survey from McKinsey, of the 3.3 million people that the White House has touted as Obamacare exchange signups, less than 500,000 are actual uninsured people who have actually gained health coverage, Jim. So when you compare that to the, what is it, 47 million or so that everybody keeps trotting out as the number of uninsured before all this happened, not exactly a dent for all the grief everybody else is going through.
No, they're still aspiring to be a drop in the bucket. right now, we're at a fraction of a drop. Here's the thing. The administration didn't like the numbers that came out from the House Commerce Committee, and they'd emphasize, well, look, you know, those numbers are incomplete. They hadn't included the late enrollees who didn't have their payments due and things like that. So, all right, administration, if you don't like the numbers from this, from the House Commerce Committee, or if you don't like the numbers from this McKinsey report, and McKinsey's doing the best job they can, just calling up lots of people and saying, hey, what's your situation with your health care, your health insurance? Do you have it? Did you buy it through the exchanges? Did you have it before? Stuff like that. Now, those who've read Campaign Spot, listen to us discuss polls. You know, polls are not perfect. You can get a bad sample some days. You can get, you know, this possibility that some groups might be self-selecting in terms of the ones who are more likely to answer a bunch of questions from a pollster. Having said that, this is such a terrible number that you can be, you know, let's assume they're overestimating it and it's only 60% still had insurance there before. Well, that's still terrible. You know, that this is, these numbers are not bad enough. And McKinsey is not, you know, the NRCC. They're not some, you know, far off branch of the vast right wing conspiracy. They're a business consulting and analysis organization. And so they have no incentive to make this look any worse than it is. And the portrait painted by this survey is very, very grim, that this was an enormous amount of grief and aggravation for very little impact on getting insurance to the uninsured.
Yeah, and Jim, it's interesting to watch how the media deals with this or doesn't deal with it. When it was announced, what was it, last week or the week before, that probably roughly 80% of folks had actually paid their first month premium. Everybody was doing cartwheels, even though a full 20% were delinquent on their payments. Now this story doesn't seem to be getting much traction at all.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I remember them thinking that. See, it's 80% of paid. That's the good news? Really? You sure? Only 20% are going to lose their insurance because they didn't pay. Ha ha. And I that's not really the good news that they seem to think it is. But, you know, I guess when you're desperate to have some good news, you're just going to have to accept that they'll take anything. And if it requires them to kind of stretch the truth or pretend that something is good news when it isn't, that's what we can come to expect.
But there's critical stories in the news, Jim, that deserve attention. So it's understandable. I mean, we have to see a constant loop of Beyonce's sister attacking Jay-Z, so there's clearly not enough time for a story of this magnitude.
See, that could have been the good martini. No, tune in for the rest of the week, dear listeners, because I may have thoughts on that, depending on what the facts are, since we don't know exactly what prompted the outburst of Beyonce's sister and such. But I do recall not long ago conservatives being urged to embrace Jay-Z and Beyonce as role models for marriage. And while this did not, we don't know that anything necessarily is wrong with Jay-Z and Beyonce, this might be an indication that not all is well over there. And I don't like the idea that conservatives need celebrity spokespeople for anything. because our ideas are better and our ideas work. But anyway, that's the awkward segue to the next bad martini, Greg, isn't it?
Yes, and staying on Obamacare, as it turns out. You know, Jim, you and I both live in Virginia, and while we may not think about it too often, we kind of feel good about ourselves that we don't live in the district or live in what many people call the People's Republic of Maryland, because historically, Virginia has been freer. There's less regulation, lower taxes, all sorts of other things. And for the most part, that's still true, even after a few months of Terry McAuliffe as governor. But fear not, he's working on it. But anyway, Virginians, this is from the Daily Caller, Virginians will see upped health insurance premiums in 2015, ranging from 3.3% to 14.7%, according to the filings from the first state to release any information about what Obamacare could bring next year. If there is a good martini as part of this, most states will announce what their premium rate hikes will be by this summer, so that'll be on the books heading into the fall campaign season, but it's still going to be horrible news, more than likely. And so all that talk of premiums being reduced by $2,500, 3.3% is pretty typical, but when you get up to almost 15% with some of these plans, that's really a sock in the pocketbook.
It is, and it's kind of galling. I remember one of my most recent tweets that just went off and went viral was just simply a question, you know, just had the headline, which talked about premium hikes coming to, and somebody was one of the other states, and just saying, who could have foreseen this? And, you know, everybody kind of said, yeah, because everybody in the whole wide world, not everybody, but, you know, a good portion of people looked at all the new requirements of the law and said, look, this is going to drive up premiums. When you add a whole bunch of older, sicker people to the insurance pool who aren't going to be paying as much, even with the government subsidizing a big chunk of their payment, the insurance companies are going to have more money that they have to pay out, and it's going to increase premiums. And of course, as you may recall, Barack Obama ran off for office saying this was going to save the average family $2,500 in this. Well, it isn't. And, you know, people wonder about, you know, why people are so down on the economy and they feel so pessimistic about the future. Little basics of life that aren't really discretionary spending, like, say, gasoline or, say, your health insurance premiums keep going up. That takes a bigger bite. It eats up whatever wage growth there is. And as we all know from the economic figures, it hasn't been that big for a good number of years now. So, you know, here in Virginia, it's not surprising. It's frustrating. It's not what the president promised. I hope people in Virginia wake up and pay attention and kind of realize that, look, this isn't coincidental. That basically, that yes, you know, insurance premiums always went up a little bit. But this is a, you know, year in, year out. But this is a fairly sizable jump that really should have everybody in you know, the hair on the back of your neck standing up. Because if it's this bad in Virginia, boy, you know it's probably going to be bad, really bad in other states too.
Yeah, certainly the case. And the story also goes on to point out that, of course, young people will be bearing the brunt of this because they need to keep costs down for the older, sicker people. So good times all around. All right, on to another martini. This one we'll label as crazy. And Jim, this is another story that will probably keep the McKinsey story out of most of the mainstream news. Karl Rove was part of an event, I believe, last night, and the issue of Hillary Clinton's candidacy came up, and he was talking about how Hillary Clinton, of course, has to answer for Benghazi, and he says she also has to come clean about some of the health issues she had right towards the end of her term as Secretary of State. She had to postpone her Benghazi testimony till early 2013 because she had had a stomach virus, and then she fell at her home and was in the hospital for a couple of days with a blood clot. Here's the statement that's getting all the attention today. 30 days in the hospital, and when she reappears, she's wearing glasses that are only for people who have traumatic brain injury. We need to know what's up with that. And then the response from Hillary's people is, Karl Rove has deceived the country for years, but there are no words for this level of lying. Hillary is 100%, period, referring to the quality of her health at this point. So, Jim, a lot of people, of course, foaming at the mouth on both sides of the aisle about this today, so I think it's appropriately in the crazy category. I'm sure from your perspective, whether Hillary suffered a traumatic brain injury or not, she doesn't deserve to be president.
Yeah, I mean, for what it's worth, you know, Karl Rove says she spent 30 days in the hospital, and media accounts had it as only being 3 days. She did go back to the hospital several times for follow-up reports. And I guess maybe a more accurate assessment is that she was out of commission for 30 days. She was not able to do her usual work. So, you know, Karl Rove should get his facts correct there. But, look, it's common for people who have the flu. People falling because they have the flu is a little unusual. Dehydration is what they... I'm sorry, it wasn't the flu. It was a stomach virus. So that's very common. People falling because they're dehydrated is slightly less common. But the real thing is the blood clot. And my understanding back reading the HRC book by Jonathan Allen, which came out earlier this year, said that, look, this blood clot, had it been in a slightly different spot, closer to a brain, could have had very serious health consequences you know, including brain damage, including, you know, circumstances like that. Now, Karl Rove says the glasses she wore afterwards was for people who have traumatic brain injury. Look, we don't know precisely the matters of this, and it's one of those circumstances where when you decide to run for president, and we're all assuming Hillary Clinton's going to run for president, you do give up a certain amount of your privacy, particularly regarding your health. And that's, you know, you could argue that's unfortunate, but look, you know, people don't want to elect someone who's not going to have the physical health and stamina to keep up with what is indisputably one of the most challenging jobs in the world. It seemed very serious at the time. Now, many people noted it was right before she was supposed to testify about Benghazi, and her testimony had to be pushed back. Assuming that everything was on the up and up, even the exclamation says it's very, very serious. And then, you know, knocks you out of commission for a month is something that happens. And, you know, heaven forbid she becomes president of the United States and has another, incident of a stomach virus, trips, falls, and faints, injures herself, and has another blood clot. Then, you know, what happens? Do we have a president who's out of commission for a month again? You know, like, this is something that deserves a little bit of serious treatment, and just denouncing Karl Rove doesn't cut it. Ann Althaus is a blogger who's got a really good piece up today, and she goes back to a 1992 column by William Safire, because Paul Tsongas was a guy who ran for president up against Bill Clinton back in 1992. It turns out, I mean, if I remember correctly, Paul Tsongas died 1994, 1995, something like that. I mean, really only 2 or 3 years after he ran for president. So
right.
Had he been elected that year, he would have died in office. And that, you know, is something we all kind of want to avoid. And, you know, got to wonder, you know, how early into the presidency would these health issues have been serious enough that he would not have been able to handle the stress of the office? And then, of course, she points out the flip side is, remember all the age, the jokes about Bob Dole's age. And here we are 18 years after his 1996 campaign, and he's still around. So it's one of those things where it's not outrageous to expect straightforward answers about health concerns of presidential candidates. Between age and her health history, Hillary Clinton's going to have to answer these questions. And while you may quibble with the wording of how Karl Rove did it, and whether he, you know, didn't get the details right, I think he's raising a legitimate issue here. And you kind of, you know, and Althaus observes that the volcanic reaction we're seeing from the folks who are fans of Hillary Clinton kind of makes her wonder that there's suspicious that there's some sort of real problem that they don't want to talk about.
Jim, have a great day.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Go online and order the Weed Agency. We'll be back tomorrow for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.